I'm David.
And I'm Matt.
And you're listening to the Mastering Mondays podcast. Welcome to this week's episode of the Mastering Mondays podcast, brought to you by No More Bad Mondays. Today, we're thrilled to have Stuart Ridout with us. Stuart works at Microsoft as part of the Modern Work and AI Tech Strategy team and is an AI prompt guru. He's also very clued up on Microsoft Teams, as you'd expect. Stuart, it's great to have you with us.
It's great to be here with you today. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Stuart. Yes, it's brilliant to have you here. If I may, I want to start with understanding a bit more about your journey. So how did you enter the world of tech and end up working for Microsoft?
So technology is actually my second career. My first career was I was a teacher. So I was a teacher for about 13 years in a variety of secondary schools, taught computer science, got up to be an assistant head teacher, all of those kind of things. And then decided I needed a change. So I changed, and then I went into project management, dealing with scanning exam papers. So when you do your GCSEs and A-levels, they all go off to a scanning warehouse and they chop it up into little bits and it's all marked on screen. And then kind of went through a couple of project management jobs, consultancy, and then ended up in Microsoft. Started as a project manager, then moved into customer success, and then customer success technical strategy.
And how long have you been there for now?
So I've been at Microsoft, it'll be coming up for 8 years this year.
So there is life after the classroom.
There is life after the classroom. I have to say, it's a very sad state of affairs, but I have a lot of teachers reach out to me to say, how can I get to where you are? What's my plan to leave and things like this? It's very difficult to leave teaching just because of the way that notice periods works and things like this. I loved teaching. And actually still what I do a lot today in my role is to do with teaching. I'm still a teacher in my heart. I very much miss the classroom, the young people, all of those kind of things. It's the politics and the interference and all of that. That's the bit that makes it very, very hard and means that we have a big teacher shortage. So I would never do anything down for teachers. They work incredibly hard. They work ridiculous hours. So I'm loving where I am.
Good. Well, let's move on to the tech then. So we've heard some vague rumors about a new Microsoft product called Copilot. Just the occasional whisper.
Occasionally, the world talks about AI just a little bit. It might become a buzzword at some point that people talk about AI.
Absolutely. Anyway, no, seriously though, what do you believe is the overarching vision that Microsoft has for AI within the 365 environment?
I mean, we have to remember Copilot and all AIs, they're still babies. They are still very early products. So, all the time we see people stretching AI to do new things that we never even envisaged would be the case. There's still a lot of interaction that you have to kick off as the user. I think like the vision is more autonomous stuff that would do things for you and just say like, hey, you know, I think you've done this, you know, would you like me to do this for you? A lot more automation. And we're kind of moving, and you know, this is something that we spoke about at some of our recent conferences. We're moving from kind of AI as our personal assistant across a journey to be like, not just that, but still your assistant, but also your team's assistant, but then also agents that do things in the background for you and kind of just help to move things along. If you think about a project manager, sometimes things don't happen until a project manager kind of goes, oh, I need to nudge that along in the process or whatever. If they had something that would help them to nudge that process along and say, hey, I've just noticed that this person has submitted this requirements document. Would you like me to organize a requirements review session with all the people, then that's something that would help us all out and would kind of accelerate our work because we don't have to wait for that person to notice that that's happened or go through their inbox until they see someone say, hey, I've submitted this document. I need you to put it through for review and things like this. So, but there'll be a whole world of stuff that none of us have even envisaged will happen.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting point, Stuart, because yes, that idea of almost it managing workflow by understanding the workflow without overtly having to use a workflow product, essentially, isn't it? Yeah, that kind of helping hand.
Yeah. And it would be great, you know, even in that case there, because, you know, we can do things like that now with workflow. Has this document been submitted? Yes, it is. But if you could get an AI to do like a pre-review of that to say, hey, look, you know, you've submitted this requirements document, but it needs to have A, B, C, D, E and F. And then if any of those sections are missing, then it bounces that back to the author and say, hey, like, before you put it through review and we get 20 people in on a meeting that's going to cost thousands of pounds, I've actually noticed that section D is missing. So you probably need to add that in before we move ahead with that. And that saves everybody time. It saves companies money, allows us to be more efficient and things like this.
So we focus largely on small to medium businesses and education providers, supporting them with Microsoft and, you know, what they can do with Microsoft. Could you give us some pointers on how you think they should be embedding Copilot into their work practices?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't think that they are, and you know, those kind of organizations are no different really to any of the massive, super huge corporates who are dealing with this, because I think you kind of go on a journey with AI, and I talk about it a little bit like an air fryer. Do either of you have an air fryer?
Matt does. He's really proud of it. He says you can't beat the way it cooks fries, apparently.
Absolutely. So you're either in one of two camps. You either have an air fryer or you know somebody who has an air fryer and has told you all about how wonderful it is. But your air fryer journey that you go on is you get this air fryer and you go and you cook a few chips in it and you go, oh, yeah, this is good. But then you kind of go, oh, yeah, but I'm not going to be able to use that for my roast dinner because it's just like one drawer and it's quite small. So I'm still going to have to put the oven on. So what you have to do is look to see how can you optimize your meals. And you look for meals that are kind of optimized for air fryers. Or you kind of go, oh, actually, I can cook this in a different way. Like, so I could cook my chicken and my potatoes all in the same thing at the same time. And kind of AI is a bit like this. If you try to make the way that you work fit the AI, then you will probably get okay results. But so sometimes you have to think about how can I just modify the way that I work to make it AI optimized. So people might kind of go, oh, but I want this to do the whole thing for me. And you're like, well, it's not going to produce that document to 100% standard for you. So let's try and get it to 80%. And then you can do that final bit of 20% yourself. You can do that final bit of polish. I think there's so much buzz around AI that everybody's like, oh my goodness, it's going to do all, I'm going to go on in the morning and I'm just going to type into my computer, hey, Copilot, do all my work for me. It'll do all my work for me. And then I can just go and drop my kids off to school, go out for a run, do all the stuff that I want to do, cook my air fryer meals and all that. So I think you have to look to see how does it fit into all of the parts of my job. And rather than kind of go, oh, I've got this really horrible job where I've got to get 25 spreadsheets and combine them through and pull data from here and from here and from here and from here and from here, combine it in this weird way, then perform this analysis, you know, people do that and then they say, oh, can I get AI to do that? And that's not really where AI is today, because it is an incredibly complex task that it takes you 5 hours because it is very complex. So what they need to do is look for all of the small tasks that they do and look to see how they could get AI to help them cut down. Like if I can save 10 minutes on this job that I do 5 times a day and I do that all week, that saved me nearly my 5 hours that I would need to do that horrible, gnarly spreadsheet task. So it's about looking for that and just saying, actually, through the whole of my end-to-end process, how can I do all of those things?
Just moving on very briefly to Teams and, you know, how Copilot can work within the Microsoft Teams environment. You know, one use of it, which I believe is coming, I don't know if it's out yet. In one of the businesses I'm involved in, we use Shifts, which isn't used nearly as much as it should be, because it's actually really powerful, really, really powerful feature. And one of the things that would be, you know, that I believe is going to be introduced and that would be very useful would be questions about, you know, who's not turned up today, who's got a shift, you know, those kind of like natural language questions about managing teams and managing people who are in the office. So here we're talking very much about kind of frontline workers. So this isn't people who are doing spreadsheets, et cetera, but, you know, that, you know, I can see a real advantage to, you know, co-pilots in terms of answering questions on, you know, procedural issues. How do I do this? How do I do that? And basic management questions about people who are expected in, who aren't in, so on and so forth. Well, you know, what's your views on that?
Yeah. So I mean, so firstly, that is there today. So there's co-pilot for shifts. There's like a shifts for teams plugin that you can have, and you switch a little switch across and connect up, and then you can ask questions about it, like what are the open shifts this week, who's on shift, what are the time off this week, things like this. So that's where it gets really exciting. So that's like a first party extensibility. So stuff that Microsoft has built to say allow you to say, actually, let's go and have a look at shift, get that. Where people starting to build their own extensibility to say, hey, you know, I've got this other system. I've got Salesforce or I've got my own homegrown system that I'm using, this homegrown line of business. Let me see how I can plug in Copilot to that. So I can say, hey, are there any orders that are stuck today that have been outstanding for more than 2 days or things like that? That's where it starts to get really exciting, where we go, you know, beyond kind of the Microsoft data. I mean, you know, Copilot in Teams is fantastic. You know, I know that a lot of people get a lot of value from running Copilot across a meeting and saying, hey, what were the actions and outcomes from this? But if you can start to combine that with other sources and say, hey, we had a meeting today and Matt said that the percentage of orders taking over 24 hours to fulfill was 10%. Can you verify that? And it can go and look and verify that and say, well, actually, he might have been telling you a little porky pie there. Actually, it's 25%, and things like that. That's where it starts to get really, really interesting.
And that's, I guess, where you know, Copilot Studio really comes into the picture in terms of specifying those data sources that the AI needs to interrogate for these kind of questions.
Yeah, and you can go on this journey. So Copilot Studio is a low code way of implementing and extending Copilot. You can take that through into kind of code and get proper coders to do that. You can, you know, obviously we've got a number of partners who can help you to do that. Things like if you'd already been working on message extensions for Teams, there are easy ways to convert those into copilotable actions and things like this. So you kind of go on your journey. You can take your journey however far you want. There's lots of ways to extend it, and a lot of the third parties are implementing their own Copilot plugins as well. So if you're using other software as a service solutions, then they have ones there that will just plug straight in, so you don't even have to do the work to extend it.
I just want to touch back on a point you made when I asked about small to medium businesses embedding Copilot into their working practices. You said that, well, actually, there's no difference to the small and medium businesses as it is to large businesses. And I think that's important to highlight because, I mean, just a few days ago, Microsoft posted on their LinkedIn page a customer story, and it was about Carlsberg. And it's how Carlsberg, who we all know is a, you know, huge company, are using things like Copilot to improve experience, boost efficiency and security. And they're using the same tools that all businesses, regardless of size, you know, can access and can use. So really, you know, small to medium businesses can have the same power in many ways. And just wondering if you have any more thoughts on that.
They do. And in some ways they have more power in that because these very large companies, lots of them, they will implement Copilot within the finance department and within the HR department, etc. And they can build up communities of expertise within finance or within HR. Their challenge is kind of breaking down the boundaries between finance and HR and sales so that they can kind of go, oh, you're using that finance. You're using this prompt to help you in a finance way. That's not quite the same as what I'm doing in HR, but it's similar enough that I can learn from you and modify that to make that work for me. In small to medium, those boundaries aren't there or certainly aren't as strong. So they've got a lot more agility to be able to say, hey, like, we're going to get like a co-pilot champions working group together. And, you know, and we want you to spread your practice between each other because Copilot is incredibly powerful, but sometimes you need, sometimes you don't know what you don't know and you need to see other people's prompts and be able to go, oh, that's a great problem. Oh, you asked for that response in a table. Oh, I never even thought about asking for that response in a table. That makes it much easier for me to work with than just a whole prose load of text and stuff. So in some ways they have more opportunities to be more agile and kind of get results quicker just because of the way that they're set up.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And of course, the key to getting the best use out of AI is to know how to communicate efficiently with it. We mentioned that briefly before. Can you give our listeners some advice on how to create prompts that give the best results?
Yeah, so, I mean, again, there are lots and lots of things out there that say, you know, this is how I would recommend you do this and stuff like that. The Microsoft recommended structure has four parts. So it is goal, context, source, and expectation. So if you're in the UK, then it's your GCSE. You just need to remember your GCSEs. So goal, context, source, and expectation. So goal is specifying to say, this is what I want you to do. And quite often that's where people stop. They say, create me a job description for a senior project manager. And that's where they stop. And then they get results back and they go, yeah, it was okay. It was okay. But they need to give it more. So context, well, why do you want it? What is special about this this senior project manager? And also, what's the hidden context? What's stuff that you've already got in your head that you're just assuming that everybody knows because Copilot doesn't know that? So what's the goal? What's the context? What's the source? Again, if you can point it to sources or even just tell it what kind of sources you want, it will help it. And then lastly, expectations. So what does good look like for you? So instead of saying, create a job description for a senior project manager, you're saying, create a job description for a senior project manager who is leading on the launch of a new consumer tablet device. So that's our context. You know, what kind of person do we want there? You're going to get a very different answer already there because a project manager could be building houses, they could be leading IT rollouts, or they could be project managing marketing and things like this. Then saying, use, and you could, you know, let's say that you've got a company standard for project management. You could go and point it to that standard and say, you know, use that as our baseline, or even use industry standards in the UK for project management to help with qualifications. And then your expectations, it should be two pages. It should include key responsibilities, education, experience, and attributes. Now, I know for some people, they kind of go, oh my goodness, that's a really long prompt, because they've been kind of teased in to be able to think that they could just say, do me a job description for a senior project manager. But most prompts are kind of between 7 and 9 words. And actually, they kind of really get to be quite effective from about 25 words upwards. So it is like an investment of like 3 minutes. But that 3 minutes will save you 60 minutes on the other end creating that. Another example is summarize my emails. So, you know, we all want to keep on top of our mailbox. A lot of people have a prompt, summarize my emails. What emails? The new emails, the old emails, the unread emails, the customer emails, things like this. Somebody said to me recently, they said, I said, summarize all of my important emails. And I said, but what's important? I said, because we've all been there where we've received emails from people, and everybody who sends you an email, to them, their email is the most important email. To you, maybe not so much. I said, you need to help Copilot out by saying, summarize all my important emails. I care the most about emails that have come from external email addresses from my customers, anything that's to do with a project that's landing in 2 weeks, or anything that comes from my boss. put it in a table, order it by date, put a column in that tells me if there's any actions for me. And then and they go, oh, that's amazing results. And you say, yeah, yeah. So you just have to invest a little bit more time in that. And then you have to share that with other people in your organization, because there's still five other people who are just typing, summarize my emails and go, yeah, it's okay. I didn't really get out of it what I want. I have a great prompt that I got from somebody else in, I think he's in Germany. And he has an end of the day prompt where, and a lot of people kind of have a start of the day prompt. And they have an end of the day prompt where they say, instead of at the start of the day doing that review, they do it at the end of the day. And they say, right, okay, section one, tell me everything that's happened today and any actions that have come out under my meetings. Section two is look at all my meetings for tomorrow, put it in a table, show me which ones are internal, which ones are external, and any prep that I need to do from that. Section three, tell me when I should take breaks and how I need to optimize my day. And I tell you, the output that I get from it is gold. It's a brilliant prompt. I wouldn't have written it myself. I only found out because so I created a power app called Prompt Buddy, which allows people to build up their own enterprise prompt libraries. And anyone can get that. So if they go to, so if they use Power Apps in Teams, they go to aka.ms/get-prompt-buddy. And that allows you to create this prompt library and attach it to apps and personas and departments and things like this. But yeah, so I wouldn't have that prompt if somebody else hadn't shared that with me.
That's fascinating. I particularly liked that stat that you gave us where the average number of words of a prompt is something like 7 to 9 characters, and actually they start to get effective from 7 to 9 words and they start to get effective from 25. You know, that's absolutely a lesson for us all, isn't it? That you know, more is more. That actually, you know, if you just spend that extra bit of time, and I'm assuming that, of course, that's the thing, isn't it? The more you give it, the more, the better it's going to perform. You're not going to overdo it. It's not going to ever get overburdened by the amount of information you're providing. So, you know, cut loose, really.
Yeah. And so people talk about hallucination. And I kind of think about all AIs, that they're like happy little puppies. They just want to please you. So if you don't give them enough guidance, then they will fill in the gaps. So, you know, this whole thing about this hidden context, I think, is a really important one. So let's say I want you to write, I want you to help me write a case to make to my manager for promotion for me. Here is a document that lists all of the great things that I've done today. Help me build up my justification why I need a pay rise. Now, the hidden context is I only got a pay rise or a promotion or whatever 12 months ago. The average time between promotions for the next level is 3 to 5 years, and I'm in a really high-performing team, so everybody performs really, really well. So that's the hidden context. If you tell it that, then it will give you better results because it's like, oh, I get it. I can tailor what you want here as well. Something else that people talk about adding into their prompts, and it's not officially part of kind of our recommended structure on our adoption site, is about a persona as well. So I've got an example I talk to customers about where I use Copilot to say, I want you to write a Instagram post about a new energy drink that I'm launching. And it kind of writes it in, coincidentally, it writes it in my voice of middle-aged white dude. And this energy drink is for teens, sorry. So it's targeted for teens. And so I say, right, okay, but let me now say, as a 14-year-old experienced user of social media, write this Instagram post, exactly the same thing. And it's got a lot more like slays, fam. Hey, fam, want to slay your day? All of this kind of stuff. That is not the output that would come out of my brain or my mouth. But, you know, by asking it to adopt a persona, we change the output. And so that's really powerful as well.
I've worked with a few schools now that have actually gone out and purchased third-party tools to build prompts for them. So the example I'm thinking of is for a classroom, and basically they go onto this piece of software and it has all the prompts they could probably ever want really well-written prompt to build classroom materials. They click on it and it gives them the classroom materials. Do you think that's a good approach, or actually what they should be doing is learning how to prompt themselves and build that prompt themselves to get an even better outcome? Or do you think it's kind of okay to kind of fast track it and have someone else design all the prompts for you?
I mean, you know, we are going to see more and more AI infused into all of those things, and tools for teachers and educators to help them with their jobs have always been there. They've got massive workloads, as we know. You know, so anything from report writers, we've had report writing software for years and years and years, and we will see those kind of things do that. The advantage for them for like a prompt builder thing that's kind of specified to their domain is that whoever has created that has built a whole load of the background into the system prompt, which tells the AI how to behave. So they'll have built a whole load of that background context into it to say, like, you are an AI helper that helps teachers create resources for primary schools, let's say, or whatever. So they've done a lot of the work for you to help give the AI the context of where it is. Now, you might learn a lot from that. And again, like we say, you know, AI is new to everyone. So lots of people, they don't know what they don't know. So if a third-party tool helps you to think about that structure of your prompts and then allows you to kind of go beyond that afterwards, then I'm all power to the person. But it's not entirely necessary. If you want to kind of invest that time to say, actually, I'm going to learn about good prompting, then it will pay you back multiple times down the road. Because if you need to use AI to help you write something for instance, to justify promotion, that's not going to be in that tool, because that tool is focused on classroom materials, writing reports, constructing schemes of work, all of those kind of things. All of the other stuff that you need to do in your job that are outside of the classroom aren't necessarily going to be in there. Or if you want to use the AI to help you write a letter to a solicitor or whatever, those kind of things. But if it helps you to think more about prompt structure and what goes into a prompt, then all power to whatever helps you to do that.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. I don't think I've thought of it in that context of kind of saying, well, you can actually, you're sort of getting the fast track option right now, but it's also still teaches you at the same time, because you're obviously reading those prompts, you're ensuring it's correct.
And sometimes you might not, depending on what model that tool is using. So I don't know whether, so that tool might be helping you build the prompt and then carrying out the action for you, or you might be copying that prompt out and then going and sticking it into whatever AI tool you're using. So depending on that case as well, you might not get the results that you want necessarily out of their model, but you could take that prompt and go and put it into somewhere else and get the results from a different model. You know, as you know, we see that these GPT models are changing all the time and becoming more sophisticated, more efficient and things like this. So it gives you flexibility.
Of course, what you could do as well is, you know, you mentioned earlier about co-pilot working groups. If you have a working group in your school, in your college, or in your business, you could all sit around the table and design the best prompts, you know, and store those prompts so you can all use them. So you're avoiding the need to use a third-party tool. You're designing them yourselves, and you're getting a better understanding of how to do that. So, yeah, no, great. Thank you.
Stuart, if you were looking at, or if you were talking to a business or educational provider who isn't currently using AI in a structured way, so obviously there may be employees who are using it off their own back, but it's not used as a structured way within the business. What would your advice be to them? What would be the one thing perhaps that they should be doing in terms of starting to embed the use of AI within their business or their organization?
Firstly, I know you said one, but I'm a rule breaker. I can't follow the rules. So I would firstly say to any organization, there is AI usage in your organization today, regardless of whether you provide an AI tool or not, regardless of whether you prohibit the use of AI or not. It is in there today because somebody is going off to ChatGPT or whatever, and they are doing that. They are doing that today. So actually, if you embrace it, then you get kind of you control the way it's used. So for instance, you know, anybody, any of the Microsoft 365 plans, they have Copilot, the web version, rather than Copilot that's embedded into Teams and Word and Excel and PowerPoint, which has an additional license. But actually, the Copilot on the web is part of those plans, and they have data protection on them. So whatever you put into that, Microsoft don't use that to train the model. So what you really need to do is say to people, hey, like, we're embracing this, but use this because this is safe, and they don't use your, we don't train your data, train it using our data. So please use it and then tell us how it went. You know, we want to embrace it, and then we want to spread that good practice amongst everybody else. I think leaders have a responsibility to say, hey, I used AI for this. I used Copilot for this, or whatever. I think there is people a perception amongst some about the use of AI is cheating. If I use AI, that's cheating on my job. And actually, if leaders can say, I did this and I used AI to help me with my first draft, then that will kind of help give everybody else permission to kind of go, oh, okay, I've got that. And again, you know, if you look at, you know, I mentioned report writers earlier, you know, if you talk to parents and say, how happy would you be that a teacher uses report writer or uses AI to write your child's report, they probably might not be very happy with that. So we need to find a way to actually share that and say, hey, like, we use AI at some points in the report writing cycle. There is always a human at the end of it. It is always human checked and verified, because in real terms, you know, lots of schools, they've been using report writers for years, even just doing copy and paste. Before they had report writers, they were doing copy and paste then and having typical top, middle and bottom reports that they would kind of go, oh yeah, I'll paste that and then tweak it. And so I think if you're open with it and honest and say, but there is always a human in the process, then people feel a lot more comfortable with that.
Your point about the security aspect and the models not being trained on your business data is I think very, very important. And as is the thinking that, well, if you don't kind of allow it or you don't promote it within your organization, that people won't be using AI, because they absolutely will, because it's a massive time saver, and anybody who has used it will continue using it, because it's kind of embedded within their working processes. So I think that's really, really valuable, and it's a great way of promoting the use of the controlled use of AI within the whatever ecosystem you have in your workplace.
Yeah, you know, and business leaders, they want to get the best out of their people. They want to get the best out of the time. They want to get the best out of the money. But they just need to make sure that they do it in a safe way. And it's AI is so hot right now, you kind of got to just embrace it and say, you know, come with us on the journey. We are all learning. So I want to learn from you. You know, I want you to tell me, how can your job be improved?
Can I just ask you one question about the co-pilots that are available? The general web copilot that you mentioned, but also the more specific ones that are licensed separately. Could you just explain to the audience, you know, what the differences are between the two, and why you might elect to go for the more costly license, where you're licensing against the individual product?
There are so many copilots, because lots of products also have their own copilots. But so firstly, there is a consumer copilot. So if you have an Outlook.com account or a Hotmail account or an Xbox.com account, something like this, like a normal home user account, then you have a flavor of copilot that you can get to and use there. And that is trained on a large language model, and then is augmented with web data. So, you know, if we think about when people were using ChatGPT when it first came out, and they would ask questions like, who is the prime minister or whatever, and ChatGPT would say, hey, I can't answer anything about any information after such and such a date, because that was when the model was trained. Copilot has the model, but it also then uses a web search to augment that. So it's always got the latest stuff. The next stage is, it's very similar, but it's for a consumer account. So if you have an organization or school account, so if you have some form of Microsoft 365 and you log in with that, then it's very similar, but has this commercial data protection layer across it here that says, well, we don't use your data, we don't train our models any further on your data, all of those kind of things. But the same thing kind of applies there. It is a large language model trained on zillions of pieces of information, augmented with a web search. And again, that's included in Microsoft 365 plans. Then, further along the line, you've got Copilot for Microsoft 365. The difference being there that this then has access to your organizational data. So your email, your Teams messages, your documents, all of that stuff, but in a very secure way. So people kind of go, oh, if I have Copilot and I type in, what is the boss's salary? Is it going to go and find the boss's salary that's on a spreadsheet that's in some finance person's OneDrive? And the answer is, unless you have access to that document, you won't get access to that. So if you perform you put your prompt into Copilot, it will say, okay, now I'm going to go and look and see what emails you have access to, what Teams messages, what SharePoint sites, what files you got access to, and I'm going to use that to augment my search. And then it does what we call a responsible AI check on it. And then it kind of does a double check once it comes up with the answer. It does a double check back again to say, can I definitely give them access to that? Have they definitely still got access to all of those things? So I would get a different answer for the same question to my colleague because I have access to different files and emails and Teams messages to the one that they do. So that one has a charge to it. But the value that you can get from that is immense. So, you know, we're talking that about 50 minutes. You have to save about 50 minutes a month to get a return on investment for that. And that's very easy to get to. If you're just using it for summarizing meetings, you'd probably end up saving an hour a day. We do a whole load of research around leadership and AI and how can organizations prepare better. We've got a site called WorkLab, which is full of all of this research information, white papers for leaders, for organizations about how they can do that. Currently, we're talking about this 11 by 11 metric, which says if a person can save 11 minutes a day for 11 weeks, then it will really embed the AI habit. And that's when they really start to see value out of AI. But again, you know, 11 minutes a day for 25 working days of the month, you've smashed your ROI multiple times over there. And then what you do with that time is your choice, whether you do that to go and do, whether you have less work to do and you're a better worker for that, or whether you squeeze in some other time there.
Question we ask most of our guests on the show, and I just want to ask you before we finish up, could you tell us what your favorite Microsoft application is? And you're not allowed to say Copilot. So is it something as simple as Planner, Teams, or Loop, or perhaps Power Apps, Power BI? You mentioned Shifts earlier. Which one do you really like using, or just like in general, like the sound of it?
So Loop, I think, is my hidden gem. Two. I'm going to give you two again because I can't follow rules. Two. Loop is a hidden gem. It is how I organize my whole life is organized in Loop. You know, it is a collaborative space where people can work. So I have a Loop workspace for my one-to-ones with my boss. If I gather like a small group of people to work on a V team, we have a Loop that holds all of that. Everybody can edit it. It's really agile. And then you can take parts of that. And let's say that I'd written a table of actions. I could copy that table of actions, put it in an email to the people to say, hey, everybody, can you update the table to say what your status is? And they can edit that in the email and it goes back and it updates it in my actual Loop workspace. So you don't end up with this inconsistency where there's data all over the place. So for me, Loop is a hidden gem. My other hidden gem is Power Automate. So Power Automate allows you to automate things. It is an absolute, it is a productivity goldmine there. Because it's low code. So as long as you're willing to invest a little bit of time just to learn how it works, and there is an incredibly supportive community online that helps with, Power Automate. There's lots of great YouTubers, lots of great resources on LinkedIn and stuff, but you can use Power Automate to kind of, automate your productivity on an individual basis, on a team basis, or an organization basis. So I'm going to have two because I'm a cheater.
I think Power Automate in combination with Copilot is hugely powerful, isn't it? And, the idea there is that we can ask in natural language to build an automation for what might be quite a complex process. I think that has will have such a huge influence on how we accomplish things in the future.
Yeah, those Copilots, the Copilot for Power Automate and the Copilot for Power Apps have kind of taken low code to no code to the next level there, because like I say, if we talk about Power Automate as a low code tool, there are times where you have to type some formulae and it gets a little bit complicated sometimes. I'm sure marketing people wouldn't want me to say that, but kind of Copilot can help you to do that, to say to say what do I need to do for this.
Well, it's very much the same as in Power BI, where you would historically write DAX or whatever, and now you can actually ask for some of that to be created for you. So the need to actually understand those languages isn't quite there in the way that it used to be, and that will make a huge difference to how we all work in the future. In fact, any people with slightly technical kind of personas like us, we're no longer needed. We just need business people. That's all we need.
That's it. So just keep paying me and I'll go and sit somewhere else. I'll go and sit on a beach somewhere and I'll just come and advise every now and then. I think using AI doesn't happen on its own. That's the only thing that I would say. It doesn't happen on its own. You need to kind of nurture it. You need to nurture the communities to be able to share the best practice, because it's a really exciting time. And we want everybody to come along on that journey, because we don't want people to be afraid of it. We want people to embrace it, but they will only do that if they've got a supportive community around them who are also sharing their journey at the same time.
Stuart, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really quite thought-provoking, actually, hearing your thoughts on the benefits of using Copilot and AI more generally. And certainly it's opened my eyes in certain aspects on how I personally might better leverage the use of it in my general working life. Again, thank you for being with us on this episode of Mastering Mondays.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been an honour.